Why are police photographing our license plates?
What are we doing for veterans returning home damaged physically and mentally, suffering from depression, homelessness, and suicide?
Why did the Supreme Court deposit corporate money into our electoral process?
Should we redefine middle class as working poor? Or is it just another Wall Street merger?
What's really behind new voter picture ID laws in certain states?
Why aren't NBC, ABC, CBS, and Fox asking these questions?
Hello, everyone. This is The Reasonable Voice. The mission of The Reasonable Voice and The Reasonable Voices working together on our Blog Talk radio shows is connecting the dots between politics and finance, the need for better education, humanity and world peace, and the arts, which we then gladly provide our listeners, the voting public, as informative food for thought to provoke their self-determination for equal opportunity. The Reasonable Voices are advocates prioritizing education, preserving our history, leading by example for a peaceful and prosperous world, and embracing creativity and political unity as solutions. My guest today is the chairperson of the Albemarle County Board of Supervisors, Jane Dittmar. Good morning, Jane. How are you?
Good morning, Joe Marcello. I'm fine, thanks. How are you?
I'm fine. It's a great day. We may or may not have had our last snow in the mid-Atlantic, but we're pressing on. Speaking of snow, that VDOT must be really running a tough show over there. I know it can't have been easy to not only stay within budget, but just to keep up with all these storms. What do you hear from them?
They're doing a terrific job, and yes, they have been pressed this winter. One of the things that I was really impressed by was a ride-along I did with our the head of our residency program for VDOT, Joel D'Annunzio, last Thursday. We went around to look at roads that have come to my attention from citizens in the Scottsdale district, and during that time we talked a lot about snow removal. VDOT has a certain amount of snow removal capacity themselves, and then they also hire outside contractors to do work so that they can get to roads within 24 to 48 hours.
Mm-hmm. And do they, I know people just sometimes, we all do, you have to run in the red and hope you'll make up for it the next year, but what about with all the snows, how is it affecting their budget?
I think as of the last snowfall, not the one we just had this week, they were about even in that they weren't going to have to go into road funds, road maintenance funds, to make that up. Now, I'm not sure that they're there anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Interestingly enough, I'm hearing from homeowners associations that they're over budget now.
Yeah.
And that's going to impact their residents as well.
Wow. I you know, whatever you attribute the extreme weather patterns to, whether climate change or whatever, the point is it exists. And I said almost a year ago now to my wife that I don't think we're going to have seasons anymore the way we traditionally think of seasons. I hope I was wrong. But because certainly nature is fooled by it. It isn't just us, but the birds and the robins in the snow wondering what's going on and the geese flying back and forth. But okay,
I thought that was interesting what you just said.
Yes, is there a question in there? Yes. well I'm it's just the snow has, I love snow and I have no problems driving in it and all that good stuff, but I respect snow and ice. And yesterday being St. Patrick's Day, I was eager to get home from the radio show. But anyway, back to what you do for a living, and now as chair of the Albemarle County Board of Supervisors, I know money, which is why it was my first question, finding the budget for everything. I don't think everybody realizes that, you know, you say the county budget, you don't think of all the different components of that, but certainly schools are, and taxes and so forth. So what's happening with the school system? I I think I've had guests who say, you know, if the federal government is cutting back and the state is cutting back, how does the county make up for that? There's a question.
Specifically with regard to schools?
Well, to anything, but let's try covering as much as we can. But school,
right, well,
yeah.
The lion's share of our budget, about 60% of our budget, goes to our school division, and that is a proper and important role for local government to support good public schools. And we've got a very fine public school system here. This year, they have come forward to ask us for more than the 60% share that we normally have, because they have some pressing needs, partly from what you said. We've got a state mandate that requires an additional amount of money that is very hard to incorporate into their current budget for the Virginia retirement system. And so our county executives recommended that we do increase our allocation to the school division, and they can use that money if they want for the Virginia retirement system additional mandate.
So is there any particular area of the county that's hard hit more than others, or are we all sort of watching, counting our pennies?
You mean with regard to mandates?
Well, I was thinking in terms of school districts.
I met with the principal of Monticello High School a couple weeks ago with my school board member, Steve Colazar, and he said that the Southern Theater Pattern, and for everyone that is new to that term as I was, the Southern Theater Pattern is the southern part of the Samuel Miller District and the Stetzel District. But they are feeding into Monticello. It used to be about 20% of our kids were on free and reduced lunches, but now he is seeing upwards of 28%. Wow. So we're seeing an increase in if I can generally use this term, the poverty level of our families with children that are on those free and reduced lunches. We're also seeing an increase in foster care. And I have not gotten on top of what's driving that, and that's something our Board of Supervisors will be concerned about this coming year.
You know, I think, and again, we're speaking in broader, more general terms, but I often... and I don't mention as much as I would like, only because I don't think it should be a factor, but... at all levels of government and private enterprise, there seems to be, we're lagging behind on understanding the new group of people who are feeling the financial pain. And, you know, the people who receive food stamps and financial assistance and unemployment have been traditionally thought of as a certain group of people from certain places, certain educational level. And that in itself I find repugnant bias. But the reality is, to get past that particular issue that bothers me, but the reality is a growing segment, and I think I'm hearing you say this now in this particular area, a growing segment of the population is in the situation that we used to refer to as a smaller segment of the population, a growing group of people with varying degrees of education and experience and professional history are now needing assistance, whether it be food stamps or unemployment benefits or you know, whatever it happens to be. Is that part of the larger problem, that the numbers are increasing, and at the same time that the money, the dollars, are decreasing?
Yes, I think so. The trajectory is not optimistic, but the source of the problem is still yet not defined well enough for us to think about an action plan. I suspect, and this comes more anecdotally from canvassing during the campaign, where I was knocking on doors, people were telling me that they have ended up replacing full-time jobs with two part-time jobs, maybe more. So those jobs don't have benefits.
Hmm.
And then those that have full-time jobs have found that their wages are stagnant. We're pulling out of the recession slowly but surely, but still things are stagnant. And I was looking at the Consumer Price Index 5-year history, and we've had an increase in inflation the index by 8.3%, and certainly our wages have not kept up with that.
Hmm. So it's tough to keep up hope. I can understand. You know, as you say, I certainly feel the difference. That is the difference between 2008 and 2014. But not everyone can feel it yet. It's not. It's just not reaching everyone. And I don't know. Maybe we'll talk about something else and talk about the same thing at the same time probably. But You know, recently you as in the Albemarle County Board of Supervisors, went through a slightly unusual, at least to my memory, tactic of having three different specific working sessions, that is specific, each working session specific to a set of major issues so that your focus could be locked on to get more done. How did those go? They are over now, yes, or have you found the need to have more?
You mean for the budget?
Yes, uh-huh.
Okay. Let me weave together the three things we've talked about so far, and then I'll tell you about our budget workshop. I am getting emails from an interesting new group of people appealing to supervisors not to raise the tax rate very much, if at all. And what they're citing are these fixed incomes that they're on from our now on Social Security. And they're saying that they've spent so much money this winter on heating oil for their heating bills because of how cold it's been that they're barely hanging on. And so it's one of those things where you start looking at the weather and the need to raise taxes, especially for the school division, and yet you have people that really can't afford a tax increase.
Mm.
And so it's something that we are really barreling down on and trying to figure out which way to go with to achieve as best an understanding as we can. Immediately after the budget was released on February 21st to the public and to the supervisors, we did hold a public hearing, and then we went into these workshops that you just asked me about.
Mm-hmm.
We looked at the schools during one work session, and we looked at the capital needs of the county. Those are the things like buildings and vehicles and roads that we have to work on since we do some contribution to that. And then we looked at, of course, the operating budget. What we have scheduled is yet another one, and that will be immediately after the second public hearing on April 8th for us to figure out where we're going to go with the tax rate, which must be voted on April 15th.
Mm. So there isn't a final figure yet?
No, we had to advertise it.
Yes.
And that's by law. Virginia requires each of its jurisdictions to let the public know what the maximum rate could be.
Yes.
Early enough for citizens to weigh in and a number of different ways, email or town halls or coming to the public hearing. And so we did that. We advertised a rate of 80 cents point 8 for $100 worth of value. And for those of you who are listening, we are currently at 76.6 cents for $100 worth of value. So that's a 4.2 cent increase if we elect to vote on the maximum.
Yes. Well, at least I'm sure everyone appreciates the transparency of this process. Hence, of course, you get the emails from people who are feeling the pinch of the winter because it's hitting. It not only hits VDOT for clearing the snow, but it hits obviously all the constituents in the county who are dealing with snow removal themselves and heating their homes. You're absolutely right. Let's talk about something else. I'm not getting depressed. I want to say for everybody, frankly, with the new Board of Supervisors and you as chair, and Ann Malik there, and all, you know, a lot of people I know, it seems to be a lot more than usual is being thrown at you. But at the same time, I feel like you know, every journey begins with one step, and you folks are the supervisors are really approaching it in a systematic. I mean, it's got to be sometimes mind-boggling at how much is coming so fast, isn't it?
Yes, and I think I mentioned to you in an earlier conversation that our two experienced supervisors, Ann Malik and Ken Boyd, have both remarked that they've never seen this many big issues come at the board this fast.
Yes. I mean, even as a news reporter, it seems like I'm reporting on you guys more than ever, and I'm going, gee, it's like 24/7 over there.
It feels that way.
Yeah. Well, let's I'm going to change the subject only slightly. I mean, there's so much going on, and as we just said. But what about traffic cameras? You know, there was quite a stir there when they were the red light traffic cameras that were put on Route 29, and you know, there were very opposing points of view, as there are, because Americans are like that. But, you know, the people are going to see the yellow light and slam on their brakes and get rear-ended. And but then it seemed that I heard from Carter Johnson, in any case, that no, they seem to be going well, and we're going to put them over at Pantops. But then the latest thing is, no, they're going to be delayed at Pantops. So what's the general past, present, future of traffic cameras in the county?
Currently, as you said, we have two, and they are both on 29 North. Chief Sellers, who is our chief of police for Albemarle County, gave a presentation to the board at our last meeting, and what he indicated in the data that they provided, that the department provided the supervisors, is that it is changing behavior. What's confusing for some people, and I understand this, is there is some indication that there are more rear-end accidents occurring because of this reaction, like, I don't want a ticket, I'm going to stop right now, and you're going at a speed where you have to slam on your brakes and someone is too close and doesn't respond in time. But the serious accidents where people are running those red lights and hitting other cars or being T-boned by cars in the intersection have been greatly reduced.
Yes.
And so the seriousness of the injuries are reduced. And that's a good thing. Were you going to say something? I'm sorry.
No. You go on. Sorry to interrupt.
The intersection at Route 20 was slated for a red light camera installation, but we are working with traffic congestion there at Route 20 and 250, and I think that it was delayed while we sort that out. So it's been put on hold. It hasn't been canceled, and an installation date hasn't been set, but it's on hold at this time.
Okay, I see. Yes. This is all, again, it is fascinating, and I love that it's transparent. And I love that for all of the that's being thrown at the Board of Supervisors, there's a great deal of thought, obviously, you know, bringing in people who are closer to the road, so to speak, and following their advice and considering all the angles before, again, money is thrown at something. Speaking of throwing money at something, I'm going to take a short break with my wonderful guest, the chairperson of the Albemarle County Board of Supervisors, Jane Dittmar. But when we come back, we're going to talk, ask her if she's received any letters from the federal government lately. And we'll go from there on the infamous Western Bypass in Albemarle County. We'll be right back. Don't go away. Stay with us. Thank you. Welcome back. My guest today on the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio is the chairperson of the Albemarle County Board of Supervisors, Jane Dittmar. We've been talking about what everybody's talking about, how to make both ends meet. There are budgetary considerations at every level of government and every family and every neighborhood and community. And the winter has not made that easy heat bills, et cetera, even food bills. But let's talk a bit now. We had a little drama. Actually, Ms. Dittmar has been having a great deal of drama since she's been chair on the board. But recently, for some time, every time I catch myself saying recently, I have to laugh. But for those who don't know, there has been a proposed Western Bypass, as it's referred to commonly, in Albemarle County, very near Charlottesville, and its whole idea was to avoid traffic congestion involved in the huge metropolis of Charlottesville and getting to and through and out of it. Although, before our last break, I didn't realize the traffic cameras were only on the north side of 29. Reminds me of my old city, New York. They would charge you to get in, but not to get out. Anyway, okay, all that aside, what? Just recap for some who may not have known, as obviously web radio reaches much further than the county, but for those who think they know, there was a meeting called, among other things, to discuss what exactly is we all speculated in the media, let me be honest, that the new Board of Supervisors was about to adjust the direction, or at least the tempo, or change it altogether, but you'll tell us which of those are true, of the whole bypass project. You know, those who don't know, this has been going on for a number of years with VDOT back and forth and discovery of cemetery property that the Historic Preservation Virginia wants to preserve, and it's in the path of the bypass, and you know, and then there have been other plans, Places 29 and so forth. Anyway, to throw all of that out, and the question is, tell us what happened in general, you know, tell us the story, but also the specific day that you and the board were planning to make this change and announcement, and then suddenly the federal government made itself known and felt.
See, you want a quick briefing on how we've gotten to where we are today?
Yes.
The election. All right. The election brought in three new supervisors, Brad Sheffield, Diantha McKeel, and Liz Palmer, who ran on strong platforms opposing the bypass.
Mm-hmm.
They joined Ann Malik, who was already on the board. In fact, she was chairwoman at the time. And she opposed the bypass,
yes,
for the bypass route that as was planned. So as of November 5th, there were four votes for sure to stop that bypass. And when we convened in January, the new supervisors joining those of us that were already seated, we made a decision to publicize to our citizens that we were going to hold a public hearing in February to take comments on how citizens felt about the bypass. We did hold that meeting on the 19th. It was incredibly well attended, but 30 minutes before the hearing was to begin, we received a copy of a letter from the Federal Highway Administration,
mm-hmm,
sent to VDOT, that basically said, we don't think this route is working anymore. We're not sure we want to continue the investment in it.
Mm-hmm.
We want you to meet up. We want you to explore alternatives to solving the congestion and safety issues on Route 29.
Mm-hmm.
And so that really changed the focus. It didn't change the resolution that night.
Yes.
But it did change the focus of, okay, uh-oh, we have $220 million allocated for safety and congestion improvements. What's going to happen to that?
Mm-hmm.
And we do have a Places 29 plan that was voted unanimously by the board back in February of 2011.
Mm-hmm.
It was a pretty well-vetted plan. It involves side roads like Berkmar and Hillsdale to take congestion off of 29. It includes widening 29 where it chokes just beyond the Doubletree Hotel,
mm-hmm.
north toward Palomy,
yes.
and of course the bus by ramp, et cetera. So we wanted to let the Federal Highway Administration and the governor know that while they were looking for alternatives, we had a good one that we wanted them to consider funding
mm-hmm.
with about $220 million. Now, since then, our Secretary of Transportation for the state, Secretary Lane, has decided to, or may be deciding, I guess, to convene a group of political leaders here in Charlottesville later in March that represent various communities along 29 to talk about what our ideas are. And I don't know, since that's not a Albemarle County Board of Supervisors meeting, I don't know what will transpire there yet.
Mm-hmm. So, tell us more about, can you give us a few more details about these alternative plans? Because they're not all that new, right? They have been on the table. And there are some involved, as you said, parallel roads and some overpasses. And I've talked to a lot of various people on different sides of the issue, and there are many sides to it. What its place is 29, have I got that right?
Yes, you do.
Yes.
You do, Marcella.
Can you tell us a little more specifics about that and how that, you know, how that might be a better plan than pursuing the bypass?
Well, it's an alternative plan. It doesn't really satisfy the through traffic issue unless it combines with, and that by combined I mean those side roads, Hillsdale, Berkmar, the widening, unless it combines with some solutions at the intersections of High Drive and Wild Road.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the interchanges come into play, I believe.
Yes.
And that is a great consternation to the business community and should be for any traffic that goes through there, even if you're just commuting to work at the university or further north, NJIG or DIA or any of our employers in that area. If people have experienced the 250 and McIntyre Road
yes.
Construction,
yes.
and wait for the Meadow Creek to enter there, just imagine that on 29 and those two intersections. So it's not really a perfect solution. There are just a lot of imperfect solutions out there for the final part of Places 29, and that would be those choke points.
Yes. And how is the bypass? I mean, when I first came to Charlottesville, which is a few years ago now, and once I was involved in radio news, I suddenly, of course, started hearing about the bypass. And I really didn't have an opinion on it. I reported on it, and that was about it. But not terribly long ago, I found it. I went out, and I'm driving, and I'm enjoying this wide little stretch of several lanes, and it didn't go very far, but as far as it went, it was nice, except it was only 35 miles an hour, and I wondered, well, gee, what is all the fuss about? And then I started finding groups of people, community groups, that involved some government people, but mostly just community active people who wanted to discuss it, and I realized there was quite a debate going on, and then I began to get educated about it. But still, I wonder what would the bypass do for the troublesome, for those who don't know Charlottesville and Albemarle County, Jane is talking about it, Hydraulic Road in 29 and Ryle Road at 29 are really prone to, which is why the traffic cameras are there, are really prone to have been in the past anyway, some very serious accidents. And I think in part perhaps the areas, the businesses and other development in on the corridor of Route 29 have outpaced any change in the actual route, the travel, the traffic lanes of Route 29. Is that a fair assessment, not a complaint, just an observation?
No, it is. It is. I think that's what was cited in the Federal Highway Administration letter. They said that the route that we used was a 20-year-old design. Mm. And as you said, we've done a lot of development since then.
Including a whole new shopping area at the corner of Hydraulic and 29, which I thought, at least initially, they made it easy for you to get into, but not out of. Is that part of the thinking of the county, too, on what needs to be done on 29?
Stonefield, yes, that's, of course, a consideration, and that is a relatively, actually, a brand-new development there. The other issues with the route were a little bit beyond my study, but I can tell you what I read.
Uh-huh.
There were environmental concerns about the reservoir, and there were air quality concerns about the schools in the area. These were cited in the public hearing. And then the NAACP, Dr. Turner came to speak to us and cited this whole historic area, the Sammons family and others, that the route goes through. And so there were just a whole lot of considerations for that particular route for the bypass.
Yes. Well, it seems to, I guess it's changed one way or the other. There has now been an action on all levels that says, okay, let's reconsider this and how we spend our money. And I think that's for the good. I think reconsideration, reevaluation, looking at other options, especially since there's at least two on the table that have been vetted to some extent. And I think that's all for the good. I hope that works out for everyone. Go ahead.
Here's the concern, this is from a quote that was in the Daily Progress. Secretary Lane basically said that we need to be efficient in the time that we use to consider what we're going to do, because there are other communities around the state that are road stars as well, and they would like that $220 million if it could be transferred, so we don't want to lose it.
Exactly. So there is some sort of incentive to come up with a solution.
We do.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the reasons why we were pushing Places 29, because it has already been vetted.
Yes. Yes. I don't know, did I give you enough time to talk about Places 29? Because what I've heard about it from other people who have sort of been pushing it all along, I've had as a guest Morgan Butler, who's a senior attorney at the, trying to think now, where is he? The law center, environmental.
He's the Southern Environmental Law Center.
Yes, thank you. And he was probably the first one that explained to me Places 29, but it seems like, I'm not trying to push anything. I'm just wondering, what are your thoughts about it if I didn't give you enough time before?
You mean about Places 29?
Yes, and why
I like it very much. It has other components than just those roads.
Yes.
It has a component for mass transportation, which I think we need more of in this area.
Yes.
And and like I said, the one problem is it defaults at the end to those interchanges if we don't see enough improvement in congestion with the side roads and widening aspect. So
this is, as you say, in addition to Places 29 and all the its components, and of course working on, as I drove through the other day on 250 near McIntyre and all that construction, that's already looking impressive. Of course, it's easy. I don't have to go that way, but for those who do have to go that way on a daily basis, I'm sure that construction has been somewhat frustrating. I do recall my wife coming home one day talking about, and I had reported this event in the news, and I came home, and she was a part of the news, and I didn't know there was some kind of water pipe break and drivers going through this wall of water or whatever.
Yes.
You know, remind us of that, because that, on a personal level, when you come home and you go, so how was your day? And that was quite frightening, I'm sure.
Well, as with many intersections, you have utilities that are around them. So as you're widening or doing the things in an intersection, you have to pay attention to your water mains, your sewer mains, your underground electric, your fiber optic, et cetera. And in this particular case, we did have a water main break, which rerouted traffic basically all the way around that intersection, and that is a major artery in and out of town if you're going east or west.
Yes. Well, I have to say, for all of this, and it sounds like we're talking about so much because that is part of the point I'm making. Chairperson Jane Dittmar and the Albemarle County Board of Supervisors are dealing with a tremendous long to-do list. But the good news is, there is good news, and it's all coming together, and people are thinking and talking and trying to come to consensus. And I now drove, which is how I started this last question, I drove through that construction area just a couple of days ago, and so much has already been accomplished, and you can see where it's going. I think it's going to be an amazing improvement in that area. So my next question is, there's another place that reminds me, I often go out and interview out in the Crozet area, and Old Trail. And I used to love going out to Old Trail because it was actually an old trail in your Blue Ridge Mountains, etc. But it has now become like another little town. And I wonder there, too, both for the schools, Henley Middle is out there, and Western Albemarle High School. With all the development, with all the new homes and families going out there, but nothing has, at that point anyway, changed for 250 West Extended or 240 or the town, the little town of Crozet. Is that something that's on the horizon for the county to consider?
You mean improvements to 250 out in that area?
Yes.
Yes. What's really fortunate for the Crozet area and the master plan is how easy it is to get on 64 there.
Yes. That's
true.
That
allows you to go right on into town, limited access highway, and then all the various exits that you'd want to use to get into Charlotte. I think more and more people are taking advantage of that. But there will need to be, as we move forward, we have in our master plan more growth planned for that area, the need to work on our roads. And I think that there's a road project going on right now where they're closing a road to complete some infrastructure that will improve travel in that area, but not on 250, which I think is what you were asking.
Yes.
About. I would say that they've just opened an absolutely beautiful library.
Yes.
Which again comes from growth and a master plan that is thoughtful. And so I think that people that are living out in that area are really beginning to enjoy some services that will keep them there in their community and not traveling in Charlotte unless they have more shopping to do or work to do.
And frankly, I think when you're out that far, it's almost as close to go to Waynesboro as it is to drive back into Charlottesville, I think. I don't think the distance is that great, at least to the northern part of the county. But it is the library, you're absolutely correct. The new library there in Crozet is fabulous. I've been there. And I just wonder, and you're right, thanks for reminding me, one can certainly hop on 64 out that way relatively easily. So that helps. You're absolutely right. Well, this has been informative as always, and challenging for those like our guest today who actually have to deal with all the challenges every day in so many areas: budget, schools, VDOT, weather, home heating for those for residents in the area. Even solutions for solid waste. I mean, it doesn't seem to end. But we must end the show. I can't thank you enough, Jane, chairperson of the Albemarle County Board of Supervisors, newly in that position, and certainly taking on the overpowering full plate that has been presented to her and the other supervisors, I think with great aplomb, and I appreciate your being on the show.
Thank you, Michelle.
I really appreciate, because I do watch you, because I have to. I watch the supervisors as I do the city council, and because to report the news, and I have to say, things are moving in the correct direction as a deliberate tempo is allowed with thinking through. And again, I love the transparency. I love when the public is invited to express themselves. That really is democracy in action, and not a lot of what we see in Washington. But okay, so thank you so much, Jane, for being on the show.
Thanks, Michael.
All right, you have a great day.
It's been a pleasure to be here.
My pleasure too. Bye now. Marcello Rolando here with my pets and pet peeves, hoping you'll join me in a wake-up cup of coffee, our new American pastime. You people refuse to understand Pack and Us. We're the victims thrown under your Harvard bus, going through beer and the motions, most drowning in tea, staying high on hate's repetitive notions, telling it like it isn't, like Gary Southern hiding in plain sight from northern slogans. We need arms extension to complete our cold, dead hands. Matters not urban plight, concrete hard beneath our feet, or people and elk alike succumbing to plight of West Virginia forest cheat. We are bankrupt victims needing to bust out of smoke-filled rooms in roach motels, or treading backwater to heroic sin, finding those our guns tell us have done us in. Tell it to the children of our sisters and brothers, just another twisted chapter blowing in a Connecticut wind, like streaming education prejudiced by if only when. Our vision blurred by big screen TV news or tiny screen devices, we seek final solutions in a Navy Yard crisis. Tell it to the cokeheads who pretend patriotic friendship from within, plying us with the streets drugged in, or sheep dung scented moonshine promising no government is best for our kin. In lockstep with millions blind and deaf to a world all a swirl, both squinting and wide-eyed at smartphone Ed or stooped over a half-eaten pizza bread. So militia drugged in our head, feeling deserted until someone ends up dead. Tell it to 9-year-old Christina Taylor or 22-year-old Jared Lochner, united in a Tucson parking spot by an NRA absent of shame yet overflowing in commitment to gun shops selling a lot. Gun in hand, whether Wall Street traders or street gang baiters, blurred by hunting potluck, we take the mall shot. Some have bully power to close big bridges. Others, money for cliched politicians, paving public office connection toward exempt private tax collection. Knocking at left-behind doors, to be sure, are greedy hogs and corporate whores, pushing gun power into our right hand, promising salvation in hunting humans like the Klan. Tell it to the families from Columbia back to Columbine, LaPierre and other swine, sure, no background checks at gun shows is just fine, until once again, gun rings out in our head and ears, not on TV, but the sum of all our fears. Now living by the gun, the slaying done, those needing to comfort their powerlessness with powerful arms at their fingertips, we holster for a replay of sharpshooting media quips with nothing new to say. Divided, we descend ever further below, contributing to corporate profits for those in the shadow. Tell it to the carrying crowd, so sanctimoniously Second Amendment proud, hawks defiantly gnawing parents and teachers of the dead, heads now resting in public shroud. Tell it to Aurora, moviegoers, texting or not. Guns are not the only solution we've got. But as long as guns are the marketed accessory of choice, backwood myths, education void, and computerized devices are our only voice. Accessibility to weapons busy dealers sell, and too little accountability for masculinity marketing puppeteers as well, makes easy access for us all to be shot to hell. With an average of one school shooting from university through Sandy Hook age every other day, not counting malls and theaters, by the way, may be what blows us all away. Tell it to the NRA smiling over increased sales of gun supplies, making their happy new year over our dead eyes. Tell it to moms demanding action, armed with dreams of what might have been and tearful foreshadowing passion. Tell it to them with boycotts at Wall Street towers. Tell it to the government with rings of parents and teachers encircling corporate propped powers. Telling truth is simple. Guns don't kill people, but people with guns do.
Thank you for continuing to listen, support, and share The Reasonable Voice with your friends. We are now accepting offers for your company or organization to advertise with us, and welcome new sponsors for The Reasonable Voice. To apply, please email us at thereasonablevoice@gmail.com.
Thank you for joining us today and every day, and recommending us to all your friends, both online and offline. And please download our downloadable podcasts. I am Marcello Rolando, The Reasonable Voice, hoping you will become one of the reasonable voices heard round the world.